Grandma's Attic. Pride goes before a fall. Grandma, what is this? Grandma looked up from her work. Good lands, child, where did you find that?
In the attic, I replied.
What is it, Grandma? Grandma chuckled and answered, That's a hoop. The kind that ladies wore under their skirts when I was a little girl.
Did you ever wear one, Grandma? I asked.
Grandma laughed. Indeed I did, she said. In fact, I wore that very one. Here I decided, must be a story. I pulled up a footstool and prepared to listen. Grandma looked at the old hoop fondly. I only wore it once, she began, but I kept it to remind me how painful pride can be. I was about 8 years old when that hoop came into my life. For months I'd been begging Ma to let me have a hoop skirt like the big girls wore. Of course, that was out of the question. What would a little girl not even out of calicoes be doing with a hoop skirt? Nevertheless, I could envision myself walking haughtily to school with a hoop skirt and all the girls watching enviously as I took my seat in the front of the room. This dream was shared by my best friend and seatmate, Sarah Jane. Together, we spent many hours picturing ourselves as fashionable young ladies in ruffles and petticoats. But try as we would, we could not come up with a single plan for getting a hoop skirt of our very own. Finally, one day in the early spring, Sarah Jane met me at the school grounds with exciting news. An older cousin had come to their house to visit, and she had two old hoops that she didn't want any longer. Sarah Jane and I could have them to play with, she said. Play with, indeed! Little did that cousin know that we didn't want to play with them. Here was the answer to our dream. All day under cover of our books, Sarah Jane and I planned how we would wear those hoops to church on Sunday. There was a small problem. How would I get that hoop into the house without Ma knowing about it? And how could either of us get out of the house with them on without anyone seeing us? It was finally decided that I would stop by Sarah Jane's house on Sunday morning. We would have some excuse for walking to church, and after her family had left, we would put on our hoops and prepare to make a grand entrance at the church. Be sure to wear your fullest skirt, Sarah Jane reminded me, and be here early. They're all sure to look at us this Sunday. If we had only known how true that would be. But of course, we were happily unaware of the disaster that lay ahead. Sunday morning came at last, and I astonished my family by the speed in which I finished my chores and was ready to leave for church. I'm going with Sarah Jane this morning, I announced, and set out quickly before anyone could protest. All went according to plan. Sarah Jane's family went on in the buggy, cautioning us to hurry and not be late for service. We did have a bit of trouble fastening the hoops around our waists and getting our skirts pulled down to cover them. But when we were finally ready, we agreed that there could not be two finer-looking young ladies in the county than us. Quickly, we set out for church, our hoop skirts swinging as we walked. Everyone had gone in when we arrived, so we were assured of the grand entry we desired. Proudly, with small noses tipped up, we sauntered to the front of the church and took our seats. Alas, no one had ever told us the hazards of sitting down in a hoop skirt without careful practice. The gasps we heard were not of admiration as we had anticipated. Far from it, for when we sat down, those dreadful hoops flew straight up into the air. Our skirts covered our faces, and the startled minister was treated to a sight of two pairs of white pantalettes and flying petticoats. Sarah Jane and I were too startled to know how to disentangle ourselves, but our mothers were not. Ma quickly snatched me from the seat and marched me out the door. The trip home was a silent one. My dread grew with each step. What terrible punishment would I receive at the hands of an embarrassed and upset parent? Although I didn't dare look at her, I knew she was upset because she was shaking. It was to be many years before I learned that Ma was shaking with laughter and not from anger. Nevertheless, punishment was in order. My Sunday afternoon was spent with the Big Bible and Pa's Concordance. My task was to copy each verse I could find that had to do with being proud. That day I was a sorry little girl who learned a lesson about pride going before the fall. "And were you ever proud again, Grandma?" I asked after she finished the story. Grandma thought soberly for a moment. "Yes," she replied. "I was proud again many times. It was not until I was a young lady and the Lord saved me that I had the pride taken from my heart. But many times when I am tempted to be proud, I remember that horrid hoop skirt and decide that a proud heart is an abomination to the Lord." When God knows best. My day was ruined. I had been promised a trip, and one of those freak sudden spring storms had come in the night. The ground was covered with snow, and more was falling. Of course, we couldn't drive to the city in a storm. I could understand that, couldn't I? I couldn't. As I poked moodily at my cereal, Grandma bustled cheerfully around the kitchen. How could she be so happy when my whole day lay in bits around my feet? What can I do all day? No one can even come to play. How come it had to storm today? It just isn't fair, I complained. Well, child, Grandma replied, the Lord has a reason for changing your plans. He always knows what is best for you. This I doubted, but since Grandma was so much better acquainted with the Lord than I was, I didn't like to dispute her. I could see no possible reason for a disappointment like this, and if the Lord did have one, he wasn't telling it to me. Finally, finished with breakfast, I stared grumpily out the window. Grandma's voice broke into my unhappy thoughts. I'm going to tie a quilt today. Maybe you'd like to help. That would be better than nothing, I guessed. The quilt was laid out on the big table, and the yarn for tying it was threaded in big needles. In spite of myself, I found the brightly colored quilt pieces fascinating. Look, Grandma, I exclaimed. Isn't this a piece of your dress? I remember it when I was little. I tried to pick the flowers off in church. Grandma laughed. Yes, that was my dress, all right. And here's a piece of your uncle's first suit with long pants. Oh, how proud he was of that suit. And here's your mother's first school pinafore. This one is pretty, Grandma. What did it come from? Grandma looked at the square of lavender cotton with small white flowers on it. Why, that's a piece of my birthday dress, she replied. I'd almost forgotten about that. Which birthday, Grandma? You've had a lot of them. Yes, replied Grandma, I've had a lot of them, but never one like that one. I was 12 years old that year, 2 years older than you are. Tell me about it, Grandma, I begged. What made that birthday so special? Grandma thought quietly for a moment, and then she began. My birthday came in June. We didn't have much money in the summer. Pa depended on good crops in the fall to supply the money for things we needed and couldn't grow on the farm. But this year, Ma had a surprise for me. She had bought this piece of fabric fall before, and had saved it for a dress for summer. Oh, it was a pretty dress. There were tiny tucks in the waist, and Maud put handmade lace around the neck and sleeves. I'd never had such a wonderful dress.
and it was to be worn on my birthday for a special occasion. An all-day picnic was to be held in Carter's Grove, about 10 miles from our house. I would see all my best friends and have a whole glorious day with no chores to worry about. The dress was hung where I could see it as I helped Ma get the food ready for the picnic. I was so excited that I wasn't really much help, but Ma understood how I felt. I dreamed of nothing but that picnic and the new dress. The night before the big day, I began to feel funny. My throat itched, my throat scratched, and my head hurt. I thought it best not to say anything to Ma, however. Nothing was going to spoil that picnic. But when morning came, the dreadful truth was known. I was sick. I struggled bravely to the table, but Ma took one look and announced, "Mabel has the measles, Pa. You'll have to take the boys and go on to the picnic. I'll stay home with her." Oh, what a terrible disappointment. Not to be able to wear that beautiful dress, or see my friends, or celebrate my birthday. Ma did her best to comfort me, but I would not be comforted. "The Lord has a reason for it," she said, "but I wouldn't believe it." There couldn't be any reason for a disappointment like this. I dozed off and on through the day between times of feeling very miserable and sorry for myself. Finally, toward evening, the buggy turned into the lane and Pa and the boys returned from the picnic. As the boys hurried to the barn to take care of their chores, Pa remarked, "Well, Mabel can be glad she didn't go to the picnic in her nice new dress today." Glad? Whatever did he mean? How could I be glad to have missed the biggest picnic of the year? Pa was going on. Carter's River is pretty high today, and the children were warned to stay away from it. But the little girls forgot, I guess. They wandered too close and slipped in. The current was so strong that they were carried nearly to the pasture before we could get them out. They were a scared bunch of girls, I'll tell you. They all had to be taken home. Pa looked at me reflectively. "Your friend Sarah Jane ruined her good dress," he said, "and you would have been right with her." This was true. I knew we were always together. And what if we hadn't been pulled out in time? Why, this might have been the last birthday I would have had. As the rest of the family ate supper, I thought about the day and Ma's comment that God had a reason for my staying home. Maybe I did believe it after all. I wore my birthday dress a little late, but whenever I wore it, I was reminded that God orders the lives of His children for their good. Grandma and I continued to tie the quilt in silence. I was still disappointed about my missed trip, but if, as Grandma said, God knows what is best for His children, maybe I should just be glad that I was one of them. There would be lots of days ahead for trips to the city, and surely there must be a lot more stories in these quilt squares. Finally, Pa told Ma to get the boys to bed. He said he would go back over the road and search for me. When the boys were in bed, Ma began to walk back and forth across the little cabin, clutching my red bonnet and praying that the Lord would help Pa find me before I froze to death. When Pa returned home much later and reported there was no sign of me, Ma was in despair. Pa had gone back to the Carters, and Brother Carter and his boys were joining in the search. With lanterns swinging, the men tramped through the ditches beside the road, calling my name, and when they finally covered all the ground several times, they came back to the cabin to decide what was to be done. Ma fixed hot coffee,
and they sat around the fire, warming their feet and hands before starting out. "Well," Pa said, "we'll just have to trust in the Lord to take care of her. I can't imagine where we could have lost her. I know she was in the sleigh when we left the house. About that time, I must have awakened and heard voices, for I crawled out from under the big bed to see what was going on. Ma and Pa stared in disbelief when they saw me, still dressed in my red coat, standing in the middle of the cabin. Of course, I had no explanation. I'd been sleepy and had gone to bed. It was as simple as that to me. The relieved Carters left for their long ride home, and Ma put me back to bed. It was a long time before Ma or Pa could see the funny side of that evening. The Red Bonnet. One of my favorite squares in Grandma's quilt was a soft red velvet one. When I brushed over it with my finger, it seemed to change color. One way it was dark, and brushing the other way, it made it look brighter. "Grandma," I said, "did you have something made out of this material?" "Yes," said Grandma. "I was the last in line to have that. When Ma was married, she brought many things with her to Michigan. One of her most prized possessions was a pair of red velvet drapes. When she and Pa moved into the new log cabin, Ma decided that the drapes wouldn't look especially good at the cabin windows, so they were cut to cover a cushion for Ma's rocker. Another piece made a pretty pincushion for her sewing basket. The rest of the material was put in a big trunk to be used later when the need arose. The winter when I was 4, Ma brought out the red velvet and made a coat and bonnet for me. Grandma looked fondly at the soft square. It seems as though I can still feel how soft that bonnet and coat were. I wore them for several winters. But the time Ma remembered the best was the first time I had them on. We lived several miles from the nearest neighbor, and it was often lonely for Ma with just 2 boys and me to keep her company during the day. So when Pa came in one evening to announce that there would be a sing at Carter's the following Friday, Ma began at once to make plans for the big event. Shoes were brushed and polished, the boys' clothes were put in good order, and I would wear my new coat and bonnet for the first time. Everyone was excited about the outing because it was so seldom that we had a chance to meet with the neighbors for social time. When Friday arrived, it was snowing. The ground was covered, and more snow continued to fall throughout the day. We children were sure that this would put an end to our trip, and we couldn't enjoy the snow as much as we usually did. But Pa was not to be deterred by a little snow. "I'll hitch the horse to the sleigh," he told Ma. "You get some quilts to wrap around the children, and I'll fill the sleigh with straw. They'll be warm enough." With great excitement, we were dressed and wrapped warmly for the trip. The snow had stopped, and the stars were beginning to come out when we reached the Carters. I don't remember much about the evening, aside from hearing the singing and talking, for I went to sleep on Ma's lap before it was time to go home. Ma told me later what happened that night. It made it so memorable for me. When they were ready to leave, Ma put my coat and bonnet on me, and Pa wrapped me in a big quilt. Then he put me in the sleigh with the toy. Then he put me in the sleigh with the boys, where I continued to sleep during the ride home. I can remember waking and seeing a light shining from the cabin door. I climbed out of the sleigh, headed straight for my bed. I slept in the trundle bed that slid under Ma's bed. Normally, it was pulled out at night for me, but they made sure it never happened again by keeping me in front with them whenever we went somewhere in the sleigh. But in the later years, they laughed about the night I fell out of the sleigh and caused a search party to spend many anxious hours looking for me. Ma's busy day. Grandma's quilt was almost finished. We'd been trying and talking about the brightly colored squares, and we had been tying it and talking about the brightly colored squares that had so many good stories in them. "I'd like a dress like this, Grandma," I said, pointing to a square with tiny green leaves and flowers. "This is pretty." "Yes," replied Grandma. "That was pretty when it was made up. It was one of Ma's dresses before she made it into an apron. In fact, a lot of these squares came from Ma's aprons. She was never seen without an apron on any place but church." Grandma laughed. Pa never let her forget that she tied that apron over her nightgown one night before she got into bed. I remember another day that Ma didn't live down for a long time. Grandma sat down by the table, and I pulled up the kitchen stool. When Ma dressed in the morning, she put on a clean apron over her house dress. And then she carried a fresh one with her to the kitchen to hang on the back door. This was to make sure that should we have company, a clean apron in which to greet the visitor would be handy, would be nearby. This morning, as usual, Ma hung her extra apron on the door and prepared to fix breakfast. I was setting the table, and the boys were coming in from the barn with the milk. Ma hurried to open the door and let them in. Pep, our big dog, had also seen them coming and figured this might be a chance to get into the warm kitchen. He lunged for the door just as Roy was going through. One of the milk pails flew into the air, and Roy and Pep were covered with fresh, warm milk. "Oh, that dog," Ma sputtered. "There's only one way he can do better. There's only one thing he can do better than make a mess, and that's eat." She mopped up the milk, sent Roy to change his clothes, and rubbed on the front of her apron with a towel. "I haven't time to change now," she said, grabbing the apron from the door and putting it on over the spattered one. It was baking day, and Ma was busy making bread, pies, cakes, keeping the stove hot and cleaning up the kitchen. She had no time to think about her apron again. Shortly before dinner time, at noon, Ma saw a buggy turn into the lane. "Mabel," Ma called to me, "run and get me a fresh apron, will you? Someone is coming up the lane." I brought the apron, and Ma quickly put it on and tied it just as the visitor approached the house. It was a neighbor who'd drawn over. It was a neighbor who had driven over to ask Ma if she could come that afternoon to see his wife, who was not feeling too well. Of course Ma could, but wouldn't he stay and have dinner with us first? After dinner, when Pa and the boys returned to the field, Ma and I packed a basket to take to the neighbor. As we were about to set out, Ma looked down at her apron. "Mabel," she said, "I believe I'd better have a fresh apron before we leave." I got another apron, and Ma tied it on as we walked to the buggy. It was getting on toward supper time when we returned. Ma planned what she would fix, and we hurried about the kitchen getting supper on the table before Pa and the boys came in. As we prepared to sit down, Ma decided that her apron didn't look very good, so she hurried to the bedroom for another. Pa came in and sat down at the table. He watched Ma as she finished taking up the food and supervising the boys' washing. "Mary Ann," Pa said, "have you been putting on weight?" "Why, no," Ma replied. "I don't think so. My clothes feel the same. Why?" "Well," Pa said, "I declare you look bigger than you did this morning when I left the house." "I know why," I said. Ma's got more clothes on than she did this morning. Ma looked puzzled for a minute, and then she began to laugh. I guess I have, she said. I've been rushing around so fast today that I haven't had time to take an apron off before I put another one on. She began to untie the aprons and take them off. With each one, Pa and the boys laughed harder. When finally she'd gotten down to the original milk-spattered apron, Ma was laughing as hard as the rest of us. If we couldn't remember what happened all day any other way, Pa said, when he could speak again, we could always count on Ma's aprons to bring us up to date. Ma enjoyed the joke, but she declared that she was going to be presentable if it did take 5 aprons a day to do it, and one on top of the clothes, and one on top of the other, too. Grandma laughed again at the memory, and we returned to work. Such a wonderful quilt this was, much better than a magic carpet when it comes to carrying us back over the years. Why, we had hardly begun to explore all the stories those quilts held. Why, we had hardly begun to explore all the stories those quilts held. Already I had my eye on several more. Several more that I knew would stir Grandma's memory and provide us with another trip into the past.